As the chief announced a moment ago, he is recused along with Judge Frydenberg in this matter. And Judge Miller Lerman, who would, as the senior associate justice, would ordinarily preside, is participating by WebEx, and she has asked me, because I'm present in the courtroom, to preside in these last two cases of the day, and I'm happy to do so. And for purposes of this case, Judge Robert Steinke and Judge Robert Ott, both district court judges from the 5th District and the 3rd District, respectively, are sitting as Supreme Court judges in this case. I understand that the appellant counsel is appearing by WebEx. Mr. Troy, you're with us this morning?
I am. Good morning, everyone.
Thank you. And we have Ms. Tangerman from the Attorney General's office is present here in the courtroom. I think everyone is familiar with the masking protocol, so we'll proceed directly to the argument. Mr. Troy, before you begin, I would point out that in the previous argument, we did have some technical difficulties. I'm hoping that we do not have that during the course of your argument, but if the clock stops while before it gets to zero, that's a sign to you that that we're having technical difficulties hearing you. So pay attention, please.
Okay, thank you. I did pass the test on Monday, so hopefully we won't have any of these issues.
You may proceed whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. May it please the court, Ms. Tangerman. My name is Jason Troya. I represent the interests of Terrell Newman. Mr. Newman stands convicted of a number of charges stemming from a homicide investigation and case back in 2012. He filed a verified motion to vacate his convictions and for post-conviction back on April 4th of 2016. And here we are. This is kind of the culmination of his, what he put in his pro se motion. I'm here to carry the torch for him along with Mr. Dornan. What happened was we were arguing before this court a few years ago on a denial of an evidentiary hearing on that same petition. And this court granted us an evidentiary hearing and limited it to a failure of his trial counsel to investigate and call his alibi witnesses as witnesses as part of his defense at trial. So that once we were granted that evidentiary hearing, we went back to the district court, had the hearing on October 24th, 2019, presented the evidence by way of deposition testimony and stipulation, and the district court ruled against us under both of the Strickland prongs. The district court ruled against us on the performance prong because the trial counsel in his deposition gave testimony that he did consult with an investigator. He used an investigator who happened to be a retired Omaha police detective who had many years of homicide experience in investigating cases. He used that investigator to go out and interview a couple of Mr. Newman's witnesses, as well as visit the grocery store where Mr. Newman claimed that he had left his business to go and get it on a supply run. So because the investigator went and talked to some of the witnesses and visited the place, and the trial counsel made a determination that, well, in talking with the witnesses or the investigator talking with the witnesses determined that it was a weak alibi. The district court found that the trial counsel was not deficient in his performance for making that decision. Also, on the other prong of Strickland, the court found that the alibi, not using the alibi, wasn't prejudicial because there were some gaps still in the alibi, and also that there was some conflicting statements. Some times were a little different between the two alibi witnesses that would have been working at the barbecue restaurant with Mr. Noonan at the time. And so he was denied his new trial, and that's what we're here to ask for today, is that this court will grant him a new trial based on the ineffective assistance of counsel. As this court knows, it's to make a independent or de novo review of the prongs under Strickland v. Washington on this ineffective assistance argument. I'll touch on the facts just briefly. December 2nd, 2012, this is when the homicides occurred. There was a witness, Jose Herrera Gutierrez. He claimed to be a surviving victim of the altercation. The story that he gave was that he was contacted by Morales, an individual who owned a body shop, car shop, and Mr. Morales wanted some cocaine. So Mr. Herrera Gutierrez used some contacts and got a hold of an individual last name Noriega. And on that morning around 11:30 a.m., they set out to Morales's body shop with some cocaine, just Herrera Gutierrez and Noriega. The story was that when he arrived there at the shop, he was led in by Morales. And so they're arriving sometime around 11:45 a.m. on December 2nd, 2012. And upon entering the office area, there are already two gentlemen in there that were later identified by this Mr. Herrera Gutierrez as Mr. Newman, the appellant here, as well as his co-defendant, Mr. Strickland. And so the details of that meeting were that the cocaine is produced, it's placed on a table, a razor blade is used to cut the cocaine, and once it's been cut, Mr. Newman acts like he's going to go leave the office to get some money, and instead turns around brandishing a firearm, requires that between the two co-defendants, it's Mr. Herrera Gutierrez says that he makes all three of the other occupants lie face down on the ground, and one by one, they are shot as they lay or lie motionless face down on the ground. As I argued last time with this court, there were a lot of things about Mr. Herrera Gutierrez's story that didn't add up, that weren't corroborated by the evidence, and that kind of played into Mr. Newman's trial counsel strategy. He thought that he was going to attack the credibility of the story because the forensics and other things didn't match. I mentioned that, you know, how did, it was a kind of an incredible story. How did the gunman miss Herrera Gutierrez? If he's lying motionless, face down, and the gunman goes right above his head and pulls the trigger, how does he miss him? And if he missed him on purpose, why would the gunman do that? Why would the gunman leave a surviving victim? If it wasn't on purpose, not only how did he miss, how did he not notice any blood coming from Herrera Gutierrez?
Mr. Troya?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Gutierrez was called as a witness at the trial. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Was he subject to cross-examination?
Yes, he was, Your Honor.
And did the jury hear these issues of credibility and decide and weigh those issues of credibility?
The jury heard the cross-examination by the trial counsel. That's right. Was it
so
all
really
the issues I'm pointing out?
Talk about the alibi witnesses, is that correct?
Okay, and I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure I heard your question. Obviously, the jury did not hear about the alibi witnesses.
Correct. And how many alibi witnesses were proposed by Mr. Newman?
Mr. Newman deposed four alibi witnesses, Your Honor.
And what have their testimony been at trial if they had been called?
Sure. There were two alibi witnesses that worked at Clayton's Ribs and Chicken, which is the business that Mr. Newman owned. They were Jana Mariscal and Kevin Riley. And then there were two witnesses that worked at Chubb Finer Food back during the time frame. One of those witnesses, Ms. Rosa, could not say 8 years ago or whatever if he happened to be in there on that day, and she didn't even recognize him. Mariscal, back at the, she was his fiance at the time. She testified about kind of his whereabouts that day, what time they arrived at the barbecue joint, that he left for a supply run, that the supply one was probably her idea because she's the one that prepares the sandwiches for the lunch rush and noticed that they were low on bread. And I point that out because if this is something that Newman was involved in, this, he didn't plan to go to Morales' shop. He only went on a supply run because Mariscal asked him to get some bread and he went and picked up some additional items. And I see that I've already 9 minutes into this. Here's what I think this boils down to. I know deference is given to strategy by the trial attorney. His attorney, and you'll see this in his deposition, felt that if he were to combine attacking Herrera Gutierrez's credibility and present this alibi, that those two things would have been inconsistent. And that's not the case. This is not like someone who argues in an assault case, both self-defense and mistaken identity, where they can't both be present. You can't say, well, I only shot the guy because he shot at me first, and then say, but it wasn't me that shot the guy. I wasn't even there. They had the wrong guy. That's not, these two defenses were not inconsistent. So the trial strategy wasn't reasonable. The prejudice is there. Not only would the jury have heard that of his whereabouts that day, they also would have heard that he's a restaurateur, he had a successful barbecue joint, and he was growing that barbecue from a truck to a standalone facility. They would have heard all that. That's the prejudice, and that's the deficient performance, Your Honors. Thank you.
Seeing no questions, thank you, Mr. Troyer. Ms. Tangeman, you may approach and proceed when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. I will focus my argument today on Newman's first assignment of error, that the district court erred in denying post-conviction relief on the claim that trial counsel was ineffective for failing to investigate and present alibi evidence from four named people.
Before you dig into the
yes.
deeply into that, do you agree with the standard of review that Mr. Troya described during his argument? That we apply
regarding the ultimate question of whether or not there was ineffective assistance of counsel. Yes, that is something this court determines independently. If there's a dispute regarding the facts, that is for the trier of fact, which in this case was the district court judge. So that would be reviewed for clear error.
All right.
The district court correctly found that Newman did not meet the burden under either prong of Strickland v. Washington. First, trial counsel's performance was not deficient as he adequately investigated Newman's alleged alibi defense prior to trial and ultimately made the strategic decision not to present that defense to the jury. Of the four alibi witnesses provided by Newman, two of those witnesses,
May I interrupt you
yes.
again? Before you dig into the facts, Mr. Troya seemed to argue, if I heard him correctly, that unless the alternative strategies were inconsistent, that trial counsel would be ineffective by failing to pursue that. That's a paraphrase. Do you agree with that characterization?
No, I do not agree with that. I also think factually, defense counsel testified. I don't believe his testimony is that he did not present this because it was inconsistent, but because he had concerns that it was not a solid alibi. There were gaps, there were discrepancies regarding the time frame, and also that he was worried if the jury would view these witnesses because they were closely connected to Newman, that they could potentially find them not credible, find them biased, and that if they didn't believe the alibi witnesses, which he did not think were strong, that the jury would automatically default to, well, he must be guilty, and wouldn't look at the remainder of the evidence, which trial counsel believed was the stronger defense avenue to pursue.
And the state believes that that was or was not a legitimate trial strategy.
Legitimate trial strategy. We would agree with the trial counsel's assessment of the alibi witnesses, and we would agree with the district court's finding that the trial counsel did have reasonable strategic decisions and was not deficient.
I beg your pardon. In what way, if this is the state's position, would the alibi witnesses be inconsistent with the theory of defense? Or would they merely be inconsistent testimonies submitted for the trier of fact to assess?
I don't know that putting on an alibi would necessarily be inconsistent with the other theories that trial counsel was pursuing, but that he ultimately did not think the alibi was a solid alibi, that it was credible, and therefore it could do more damage to Newman than it would help him. That was the ultimate decision. Not that there was inconsistent theories, but that he felt it was not a strong theory to pursue, that it could backfire. And he also had the hurdle that this was a joint trial, and both defense counsel had discussed whether they both put on alibis, neither put on alibis. So there were a lot of things to consider in this case. But I think it's clear from a review of trial counsel's deposition testimony that he investigated all possible defenses. He investigated these alibi witnesses, and he ultimately determined that it was not the correct route to pursue for the defense.
Mr. Newman seems to allege that this trial counsel didn't interview those witnesses directly, but did so through a hired investigator.
That's correct.
Is that deficient performance?
I don't believe so. I know. I think that is probably fairly standard. Trial counsel also explained his reasoning for using an investigator in this case. I don't know that trial counsel, if he would have thought there was a valid alibi there, that doesn't mean he would not have then gone and talked to them, but he felt this was not a strong avenue to pursue based on what I discussed previously. He also had the investigator beyond just speaking to the people that Newman had provided him, try to track down actual physical evidence of Newman's place at that time. He went to the grocery store to determine if there was video evidence or if there were sales receipts. So trial counsel wanted the investigation to focus on some solid alibi evidence, and that is why he had the investigator do so.
And there was no video evidence available.
That is correct. And that is correct. I believe it was 40 days it was kept, and that was actually, the 40 days would have ran by the time Newman was arrested in this case.
So the state argues that defense counsel did not ignore the alibi defense, but adequately investigated it and then made a strategic decision that
yes,
it was a weak defense.
Yes, that is our position.
What were the deficiencies of the alibi defense that defense counsel identified?
Well, regarding the four witnesses that were presented in the post-conviction motion, the grocery store employees didn't remember anything, and so therefore they couldn't help. Regarding the two witnesses the trial counsel was aware of at the time, Kevin Riley, who was the cook at the restaurant, he did not have any, he only had kind of a general testimony about every Sunday we would work, every Sunday we would this. He did not have any specific recollection on the day in question, so he was not able to give an actual alibi for that day. Regarding the other alibi witness, who was Newman's girlfriend at the time, that she admitted there was a 30-minute gap that happened somewhere around the time the murders occurred where Newman was not there, that he did physically leave. He left by himself. She was not with him, so she could not testify to where he was during that time frame. And trial counsel also, when looking at what they would have been able to testify to, did have to overcome the fact that there were six phone calls placed to Newman's phone at the time of the murders and bounced off a cell tower in the parking lot where the murder occurred. There were also calls between Newman and the murder victim, and so the cell phone records didn't really help him in regards to the alibi. Does The state believes that not only was counsel not deficient, but that Newman cannot show a reasonable probability that the testimony of any of these witnesses would have changed the outcome of trial. The state presented eyewitness testimony from Herrera Gutierrez that Newman and Strickland were the shooters. There was physical evidence at the scene that corroborated that testimony. And his testimony was corroborated also by the cell phone records, which showed, as I said, communication with both Morales and Strickland on the day of the shootings and the 6 calls around the time of the murder that pinged off the cell tower near the shop. Therefore, we believe that the district court correctly found that there was no deficient performance or prejudice. I do not intend to address the second assignment of error unless this court has specific questions on that.
Any questions? There's not.
Okay. We
thank
have to
you very much.
Affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Is there any rebuttal time remaining? There is no rebuttal time. The appeal is submitted and counsel are excused from this case. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.